truth is that when we begin, when we approach our obligation to keep mitzvot, so we're going to try to build things in a few ways, and these are different directions which there are different paths that fit for each person. I'm talking to you guys as Bezach and future Madlachim, and we'll begin with a quick analogy. If I tell you I want you to go meet Mr. Magoo down the block, you've never met Mr. Magoo. I could tell you Mr. Magoo has a brown beard. I could tell you he's wearing a big black hat. I could tell you he has dark sunglasses. I could tell you he has freckles. I could tell you he has huge forelocks. I could tell you he's exceptionally tall. But we all know with all these descriptions, when you get there, you might recognize him. You might not. There might be 15 people that look just like that. Could be he'll shave his beard. Could be he took off his forelock. Could be he switched from his big black coat. Could be he's not going to be wearing those sunglasses. So every description that takes different attributes, different technical details, and describes, that description is limited. On the other hand, let's say you met a person and you knew him well, and then someone asked you to describe him. You might not know how to describe the different attributes of the person. Could be that if someone asks you, does he wear glasses or not, you might not remember. Someone asked you, your first grade teacher. You remember your first grade teacher, but did your first grade teacher wear glasses? Did they have freckles? You might not remember, but you remember the face. And then, even if the face changes, you will recognize it years later. You'll say, I knew that person. Wait, who is that? Now, you don't remember the details, you remember the whole. So, when we approach emunah, when we approach our connection to God, there are a few levels. There's a logical level. We can prove God's existence, and we can prove Judaism in different ways. But that would be like describing the details. That would be like describing the attributes. That would be going around and around saying, well, you see this, you see that, you see the other thing. And there are a bunch of important points, and there are those people who you do need to show them those points. But then, what we would really want is to connect the person with Hashem, to connect the person just as when you see someone and you recognize him and you know what he looks like. That's what we want to connect. So sometimes people think, well, let's think, what's the best proof? So let's think the proof, the fact that the world keeps a seven-day week. Why does the world keep a seven-day week? How come wherever you go on the planet, people are keeping a seven-day week? Russia tried to do a different number of days in their week. China tried to use a different number of days. Nothing worked. 7 days works. Why? God created the world in 7 days. Okay. Either I buy it or I don't. You could discuss the fact that God appeared before 2 million people. 2 million people can't invent the story. How come no other religion has such a claim that God appeared before 2 million people? It's a pretty phenomenal claim. That's a pretty difficult thing to fudge. Every other religion says, well, he was the greatest prophet. This person saw him, that person saw, individuals saw. No religion has the claim that 2 million people saw like we claim. So that's a pretty powerful claim. Yet at the end of the day, all of these claims are like describing a person. They're saying this point and that point. We have to know that these claims, as powerful as they are, they have their limitation. And where we want to go is to connect. And to connect means not only to know the proofs, but to connect with our hearts, to connect with our neshama. And that connection can take place in a few ways. The Kuzari. You guys heard of the Kuzari? There was a famous Jewish rabbi, and he was also a poet. His name was Rabbi Yehuda Halevi. He lived approximately the 13th century. And he wrote a work. He wrote many works. He wrote some of the songs we sing on Shabbos. What songs do we sing on Shabbos that he wrote?
Sorry, the kingdom.
What? Oh, so we'll get to that in 1 second. Just 1 second. Smira, you wrote one of the Smiras to sing on Shabbos. I don't remember which one. So Rav Yehuda Halevi, he wrote a work called the Kuzari, which describes about a non-Jewish king of the people of Kuzar who researched different religions trying to verify which was the true religion. And the reason he was doing all of this research was because he was very, very pious in Yom Shabbaton. Was composed by Rabbi Yehuda Halevi. Yona Matzah Vomanach, Yona, Yona Matzah. That was composed by Rabbi Yehuda Halevi. The song Yom Shabbaton is an acronym for his name. Yom Shabbaton is the Yud. Hayom Nichbad is the Hey. Uva Uchulam is the Vav. Dibe Brikotcho is the Dalit. Ha'am Ashona is the Hey. Yehuda. That's Rabbi Yehuda Halevi. He put together the song of Yom Shabbaton in Nishkoach. So, he wrote this work known as the Kuzari, in which he describes how this king of Kuzar, he is very, very careful to maintain the religion of the Kuzari, but he has this recurring dream in which a god... יכול לשאול מה שהוא רוצה וזה לא מחייב ואני אשמח לעזור לו יחד עם זה רק תאמר לו אני אף פעם לא עשיתי את התעודה של הרבנות כאילו אם זה חשוב לו למען הישות יש תעודה שחוקית לא צריך מעשית, יש אנשים שעושים שיהיה אני אומר על פניו רבי יהודה הלוי So he writes the story about the king of Kuzar, that the king of Kuzar has this recurring dream in which God appears to him and says, your desire is good, but your actions are not good. So he thinks maybe he's not pious enough in what he's doing. So he tries being more fervent in the religion. And the more he tries, bottom line, he's not getting anywhere. He keeps having this dream in which he's told, your desire is good, but your actions are not. So he comes to the conclusion that he's doing the wrong religion. Then he starts researching. And he interviews a Christian, and he interviews a Muslim, and he interviews a philosopher. And finally, each one he has claims why he doesn't accept what they're saying. Finally, he interviews the Jew. And initially, he's not too impressed with the Jew. He tells the Jew, what you're saying doesn't impress me at all. And the Jew explains to him why what he's saying is... why he said what he said, and slowly but surely the Jew wins him over. And this is a true story. And there was an area in Russia where there was a kingdom where the king he converted and he encouraged his people to convert to Judaism. But Rabbi Yehuda Halevi wrote the work, and he wrote the work describing the arguments. It's unclear whether he fabricated the argument or he really recorded what really happened. I mean, was the king so indulgent to ask such good questions? Or did he composed the work in a way to illustrate points that he wanted to illustrate? It's a good way to make your point if you're telling a story about two people talking. But let's go back to the beginning of the story. The king says, I'm trying to be fervent in my religion. And he keeps having this recurring dream that his actions are not good. What is Rabbi Yehuda Halevi telling us with this dream? Rabbi Yehuda Halevi is telling us that God built each human being with an internal compass. You might call it a conscience, but I wouldn't call it a conscience. It's beyond the conscience. When a person lives his life and he's not fulfilling his spiritual potential, deep down inside, there is the feeling that he has a chasm, he has a vacuum, he has a desire, he has a need that is not being filled. So people try to avoid facing that loneliness, that vacuum that's inside of them, so they'll keep themselves busy. They'll take on another job, they'll go to the bar. A guy came to me, a guy who did Giyur, he became Jewish, and after he became Jewish, so he was studying, and he decided one day he's going to stop drinking. So he thought to himself, what's the big deal? I only drink a shot or two every night. It's not a big deal. But maybe what I've learned, I keep learning that Judaism doesn't approve of a person who drinks frequently. So let me try that. So he stops drinking. And he comes to me 2 weeks after he stopped. And we've been learning together for years, since before he was Jewish, to now that he's Jewish. And he tells me, you know, it's very interesting. So long as I was drinking, I didn't realize how I'd literally run to hide behind that bottle. Every evening, I'd end my day, and instead of facing the question of where am I, where am I headed, who am I, I'd go and drink. And I never thought I was addicted. I never thought I had an alcohol problem. I just figured I enjoyed drinking. I'm drinking a shot or two. So every night, I'd finish my work during the day, and I'd go to the bar and drink a shot or two and go to sleep. Now it's been 2 weeks, I don't drink. And suddenly, comes the evening, and I ask myself, what am I going to do with my time? And when I ask myself that question, I have to be faced with the question, well, what am I doing with my life? And suddenly, I'm more focused. I hadn't realized that I was keeping myself busy all day. And at night, I was drowning my worries, dealing with life by going to the bottle. Now, I'm not doing it. Now I'm suddenly more awake, more alert, and I realize more what I want out of life. Now I think I'm more on the path to getting married, to building my own life. He's right. So he was doing it with the bottle. Other people do it by going to entertainment, sitting on the internet, sitting on opposite the TV. Everyone drowns their life. He asks the person, what you doing in life? That person says, I don't know, I'm a nice person, I'm a decent person, I give charity, I support, I buy Israeli bonds. Now, I'm a good person. Well, ask yourself, what potential does God give each of us, and what are we doing with it? Now, part of that potential is the potential to connect with Hashem, and each of us has that potential. One of the main reasons we don't do it is because if we did do it, then we wouldn't be able to do whatever we please. If I recognize that he's running the world, then I sort of have to do things the way he says. So long as I don't, well, I can do what I want. I'm the boss. Everyone wants to be the boss. So the first point that I think is important is Madrichim, is to get the kids familiar with this concept that living a Jewish life is something that's natural to every person. It's like finding your way back home. You might not know what all of it means. If your first acquaintance with Judaism is that you come to a relative's house for Shabbos and they tell you, you can't turn on the light, you can't take a shower, you got to come early to shul, you got to stay at the meal until this and this hour, then you might not enjoy it. That's true. But if your first acquaintance with Judaism is going to Bnei Akiva Shabbat and you sing with all the guys and you see suddenly the beauty of going to shul and having a nice davening together and then having a Friday night meal that's laid back and everyone gets together and the same thing Shabbos morning and then Shabbos afternoon, so slowly you start seeing what Judaism is about. It's true that at first glance there are certain things that are counterintuitive. How come I can't go to Burger King anymore? How come I can't have a cheeseburger anymore? How come I can't eat whatever I want and I have to look and see if it's kosher? No one's saying it's easy, but in the long run it's natural. Something that we have to get accustomed to, but in the long run it gives meaning to our life. It is the meaning of our lives, and it's something which we can spend our lives avoiding facing up to, or we could stop and face up to now. You guys are in a situation, specifically you two, you've taken 2 months out of your life to think about life, to deal with furthering your knowledge. You have to think what's going to be after these 2 months. What are you doing? What's going to be the day after you leave here, the year after you leave here? How much knowledge can you gain, and how are you going to do it? That's a question that I think is more important than what you gain when you're here, because that's a question of your life. It's a question of how you'll function as members of society, members of a kilav, a community. It's good, you'll be madrichim, that's wonderful. I'm very happy for the guys who will be under you, the guys who will be madrich. You have to think also, you have to think of them, you have to think of yourselves, you have to think of your future families. How are you going to continue growing? So I'm throwing the question at you. And I think you got to think about it. And I'll give you an example of things that come up. I'm sitting with my son Friday night, and he says to me, "You taught me 3 weeks ago that Avraham Avinu, he didn't bow down to idols because stones don't talk. And then you teach me this week that the stones under Yaakov Avinu's head, we're arguing which one's Yaakov going to put his head down on. You know that, Medrash? So I thought you told me 3 weeks ago stones don't talk. That's why Avraham didn't bow down to the idol. How can you tell me this week that stones do talk?" Good question, no? He tells me, Yaakov Avinu had a dream that angels were going up and down the ladder. So was it a dream or were there really angels? Is it for real or is it just a dream? Good question. It's a four-year-old. What's a child going to ask when he's six? I'll ask you, I don't understand. If angels have wings, why do they need a ladder to go up and down to heaven? Why is Yaakov Avinu dreaming about a ladder? Angels are going up and down. They need a ladder to go up and down from heaven? And what will he ask you when he's 10? Angels are godly beings. They need wings to fly. What are they, like birds? They fly in the air. How come angels have wings? So we have to think what we're going to answer the four-year-old and the six-year-old and the 10-year-old. These are all fair and relatively simple questions. Every kid can ask you this. Our responsibility, Bezrat Hashem, you guys are headed not so far off. Even if you tell me it's 6 years till you anticipate you're going to get married. But it's not so far off. And your years of Jewish education, to a great extent, your years of formal Jewish education have ended. So now it's up to you. Now the question is, what are you going to do about advancing your knowledge? And that's another point, which I think is tremendously important whenever you speak to guys, to give them the recognition that there's always potential to continue learning and the responsibility to continue learning. The first class I gave at Mechon Meir was to a group of guys who came to Bnei Akiva from Europe, and the guys were all going back to university and had no clue of anything in Judaism. Zero. Took them about kosher, no concept. Took them about marrying Jewish, no concept. Nothing. They were clueless. I mean, I was supposed to give them class, and when I came in, they were rowdy. They weren't so interested in them class. So I said to them, "Okay, guys, you don't want to have class? Fine. I'm going to pass the paper around the room. You write down any topic you want us to discuss." So you can imagine what topics I got. I get the paper bag. It says drugs, rock and roll, a bunch of filthy words, a long list of words that obviously they didn't think Judaism had anything to do with these words. But you know what? Each and every word, we spent 2 or 3 minutes discussing what Judaism says about that. Judaism has what to say. If you don't know anything, so you don't realize that Judaism has what to say. If you do know, so you suddenly realize Judaism has what to say about music. Judaism has its own form of music and special music that the Levim played in the Beit HaMikdash. There's a lot to discuss. But what I think part of our job as teachers and madrichim is to open the eyes of the students to recognize that there is what to learn. There is information out there and that it is accessible to them. Part of the reason I put out this business card, I don't make any money off the website. But I know I need to leave guys with the potential to keep learning after they leave. All we have together is 2 months, right? After that, you guys are off. So I want guys to have the potential to keep learning the stuff that we learn. So I made the business cards. I give them out. And then hopefully guys keep learning. You guys as madrichim, I think part of what you have to connect the guys with is the concept that the Torah is there for every person at his level. Now, you'll advance, you'll see there's more depth in the Torah. The Torah is unique that way. You go to any other nation, if there's a book that's good for those that are highly intellectual, it's not good for a five-year-old. If there's a book that's good for a five-year-old, it's not good for someone who's highly intellectual. You come to the Torah and suddenly you discover there are things in the Torah for a kid who's five, there are things in the Torah for one who's 10. Throughout your life, you can discover more and more depth in the Torah. It's up to us to discover. To open our eyes and ears and look. Okay? So? Now,